I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Adam Boltwood, 1 point to you, 0 point to myself. I'm sorry.
Eat my shorts. It's Monday, which means it's time for the Front Three Weekend Review with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Dave O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Lawrence McKenna.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for joining us on the Front Three. We are, of course, talking the Sadio Mane show, Leicester continuing their free fall, as well as the Liga and all the action from around Europe. We'll also be revealing our Player of the Week, as voted for by you on Twitter. No Manchester United player in the nominees this week, Dave. You must be very disappointed.
Yeah, but I can keep that to myself. I'm happy with the boys, Juan Mata, Mkhitaryan and Martial. I couldn't pick which one was the best, so I couldn't put someone in because I thought they were all excellent.
There is one man who was excellent and is included in the poll, Lawrence, and that is Sadio Mane, the star of the show, as Liverpool beat Tottenham convincingly 2-0. Tottenham, of course, maintaining their unwanted stat of being unable to beat a side away from home in the top six. Liverpool, of course, keep up their impressive record against those very same top sides. Apart from Mane, overall, it was a fantastic display, though, Lawrence. Jurgen Klopp's side ending their recent poor form in style.
I feel a little bit contrasted about this game because for weeks people have been saying, you know, Liverpool, they can't break a team down. You know, they really struggle. And if I'm honest, I think it's not so much that Klopp got it right, though his team did, and they do deserve credit for that. I think it's more that Poch got it wrong, or at least didn't play the team that I think a lot of people expected him to. I felt like Spurs should have gone there with a back three. I felt like they would have been a lot more compact. Liverpool would have struggled to break them down, and they would have been able to break on Liverpool with the likes of Son and Kane, who did have chances and did get into areas and clearly found Liverpool's soft centre. People are talking as if this is some sort of turning point for Liverpool. And I agree that confidence is a huge part and the psychological factor is big for Klopp. But tactically, I don't think anything's changed at Liverpool. And I still think the same problems exist.
Living up to this negative Liverpool fan reputation.
It's not negative. It's realistic. I mean, Dave, have I said anything wrong there? You know, have Liverpool proven anything that anyone's put out there? That it doesn't make any sense.
So I think the one thing that completely stood out, the performance against Tottenham, the intensity was back. Liverpool haven't been as intense this season. It's reflected in terms of how many tackles they've won in the opposition's half. You know, before the Liverpool game, both Spurs and Palace had won more tackles in 2017 than Liverpool. The year before that, 2016, Liverpool were miles ahead. I didn't feel they had that same intensity in recent weeks. You know, the games that they played in January, they didn't have that same aggression. But I think with Sadio Mane in the team and him coming back into form and him back being fit, it completely changes this Liverpool team. Because if Sadio Mane goes, Sadio Mane presses, Lallana presses, the rest of the team presses, Spurs got no time on the ball in that first 20 minutes. And I think that's kind of, that won them the game. Gegenpressing was the playmaker. Gegenpressing won Liverpool this game of football. And it was simple as that. But Spurs composure, like you mentioned, team selection. Obviously with Vertonghen out injured, it's difficult to replace a player of his caliber, and I didn't think Dier stepped in very well. Wanyama had his worst game in a Spurs shirt. Victor Wanyama's been so good this season, but was just too sloppy on the ball, too slow on the ball, and Liverpool just capitalised that, and Liverpool were really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Lawrence doesn't want to give Liverpool the credit. He just doesn't want to give it. I think you're right, Dave. You highlight that sort of blistering start by Liverpool. Spurs clearly are taken aback by that. They struggled to cope with it in those opening 20 minutes, the opening half an hour. But despite the tempo,
but they also
the
played themselves into troubles. They played themselves into that.
Of course, I think Dave is right to point out individually. You know, I was convinced Victor Wanyama had been replaced by an imposter. Moussa Dembele wasn't the player he usually is. Dier has been usually reliable at the back, whether it be in midfield as well. But there was a lack of composure from him. I agree with what Lawrence is saying, though, Dave, in terms of the way Pochettino approached the game. It's hard to escape the feeling he played into Liverpool's hands. You know, that high line exposed on numerous occasions, acres of space for players like Mane to run into. It was a bit baffling almost when we've seen how teams have managed to frustrate Jurgen Klopp's system in recent weeks, no?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree there, but I think that's something that Pochettino, as a young manager, maybe needs to adapt to and learn that, there is a different style of football that will beat this Liverpool team that isn't that. But I kind of I feel a bit sorry for Pochettino, because I feel if Tottenham had played a back three with Vertonghen, Dier and Alderweireld, that would have given them a better platform in terms of playing out of the back. You think of the Liverpool press, say it's played potentially four men on the opposition, so that's going to be usually taken up the two centre-backs, the two central midfielders. So that's sort of like a four-on-four that Liverpool have created against Spurs in an attacking third in a defensive sense. That's quite a complicated sentence, but hopefully it makes a little bit of sense. Going back to if they're playing a back three, that means they've got an extra man in there. So they would have had three centre-halves, two defensive midfielders, and they would have had a five-on-four. So there would have been an extra man to rotate the ball. So I kind of, I understand why Pochettino would be blamed, but also I think he's a little bit unlucky that Vertonghen's gone out injured. And it was a game that potentially he should have changed it up and been a little bit more defensive. But I feel if they played that back three, if they played the 3-4-2-1 they were played against Chelsea, I think Tottenham would have got a result here.
That's exactly what we were saying. That's what we said in our preview, though, is Spurs should go there and sit. And, they did it against Chelsea. They've proven they can do it. I don't understand why they didn't do it against Klopp. And I also don't understand why now everyone's I partly understand it. I think a lot of people want to set Liverpool up for another fall or want to sell it as, Liverpool, that they only perform in the big games. And to some extent, that's true. Dave said the intensity was gone. No, the intensity wasn't gone in those games. It's literally that Liverpool do turn up for the big games. And Klopp said it himself. There needs to be consistency. And there hasn't been.
So you're not confident, Lawrence, that this is indeed a turning point for Liverpool? I mean, a lot was made after the game about this players-only meeting that Adam Lallana revealed Jordan Henderson called these clear-the-air talks seem to work, but you're not buying into it?
I can't profess to be on the inside of the club. I imagine they were good talks. I imagine that they probably did need something like that. I think Klopp probably has harked back to the time when he was under the cosh at Dortmund. I imagine he's also telling the players, look, it took me time as well at Dortmund. I finished, I think, fourth and sixth in the Bundesliga the first two seasons. But then things began to click. So I think he's been using that psychology. And I think he's infamously a very psychological manager. And, there are a lot of people talking him up for the weekend. Lewandowski is talking him up, saying he was a manager that made me believe. Pep Guardiola was the manager that made me see the way the field works. Seems to be the way that a lot of players feel at Liverpool. Even Mkhitaryan, who's a Manchester United player now, was saying he owes a lot to Klopp. So I think, there are a lot of people giving him the backing that he needs. I think he will try and turn this into a turning point. And, rightly so, as a Liverpool fan, I don't want to take away from that. But that doesn't stop the same criticism that I think Liverpool have received in recent weeks, and one that I think has been there all season, that can't break teams down when they sit back. And at the same time, they are still very soft at the centre. You can't deny it, Adam. Spurs had a terrible performance, but still managed to create chances. Song got through one-on-one with Mignolet. They missed quite a few close chances. And had they played two better balls and been more on point, arguably, it would have been a different result. Even 2-1 looks closer, doesn't it? I think 2-0 maybe flatters Liverpool. And that's what worries me. There's still not the consistency or the game plan in place to beat every side in the league, just the Chelsea's or the Spurs who go out there and attack.
Perhaps. I think, however, those opening 30 minutes, it could have been 3-4-5-0 potentially. Liverpool was so dominant.
But that's happened. But we know that happens. That's not Liverpool's problem. I mean, Liverpool, what we evaluated over recent weeks was Liverpool, whenever they play a big team, do seem to turn up. So that's not been the identified issue. So I'm saying if that's not the identified issue, how has this game addressed any of those things? It's good for confidence, and that's a positive. Let's take that as Liverpool fans, but let's not pretend that everything else isn't still unanswered, essentially, because, you know, Liverpool didn't play a small team. They played a team that totally played into Klopp's hands, and that was really confusing, especially considering what Pochettino is good at.
Questions unanswered for Spurs over their away form. It's only 4 wins out of 12 on the road now for them. And it, of course, brings Tottenham's 11-game unbeaten run to an end. Luckily, Spurs' next league match, it is at White Hart Lane, where they remain undefeated this season. Stoke visit on the 26th of February. Before that, of course, we've got the two legs against Ghent in the Europa League. Also, a trip to Fulham sandwiched in the middle at the weekend in the FA Cup fifth round. Liverpool, on the other hand, are not in action until the 27th of February. Yeah, they've got a little pre-season almost to look forward to. They're facing Leicester at the end of the month at the King Power Stadium. It's going to be interesting to see how that impacts the race for the top four, Dave, the additional competitions and fixtures coming in, or lack thereof, for other teams in that top five and six.
I think it's going to be absolutely huge. I think the thing with Spurs as well, if this defeat is at a really bad time in their season. If they'd beaten Liverpool, that would have been a real momentum builder to, you know, continue them through, hopefully push them through the Europa League. We saw last season, they really struggled with the Europa League. We've seen this season how Man United have really struggled with the Europa League. I think Mourinho's got a little bit more adapt to it now. He's adapted to it. He's been like, you know, okay, we'll play this team on Thursday, this team on Saturday. So I think it's something that Poch needs to do. Unfortunately for Pochettino, he hasn't spent whatever, how much, you know, 100 plus million pound on attacking talent, midfield talent that Mourinho has. So unfortunately, it could really cost Spurs. And then you have that every single season, the trend that unfortunately in the last seven games with Pochettino, his win rate absolutely falls by about 10%, which doesn't sound like a lot, me saying just 10%, but in the last seven games of the last three seasons, Spurs have won 7 out of 18. So they just get tired because of the style of football and so forth. So it's bad news for Spurs right now. It really is. And they need to be able to either get out of the Europa League ASAP and focus on the league, or maybe go for the Europa League this season. It's going to be a big, big, big test.
Good news is, Adam, they took the Liverpool game off, essentially. So that must have given them time to rest.
Yeah, the other good news is we don't have to play the top six away from home for the rest of the season, which is encouraging. It will be interesting to see how the squad copes with those extra demands. I mean, Pochettino didn't exactly sound filled with confidence after the game. I mean, as you said, Dave, he was talking about how, you know, Spurs is a different project with different resources to these other teams. And of course, Spurs have never qualified for the Champions League in back-to-back seasons. So it remains an uphill task, even though they remain in second. Let's move away from the top of the table, though. Let's go to the bottom of the table. Swansea 2, Leicester 0. We were talking about how this was such
champions.
A crucial game. The champions, Leicester. I should say, yes, they're setting some unwanted records. They remain the only side in the top four English divisions without a league goal in 2017. And with that defeat at Swansea, their relegation rivals, of course, they have become the first reigning champions to lose five consecutive top flight matches since Chelsea in 1956. Ranieri with some interesting post-match comments, Lawrence, saying that perhaps he's had too much faith in some players, given them too many chances.
Do you think he's going to tinker?
The Tinker Man has been tinkering a lot, it has to be said. But maybe he's going to tinker some more, Lawrence.
It's an interesting one. It's all getting a bit like that scene. Have you ever seen the film The Legend of Bagger Vance? You know, when he's going around, in many ways, I think Ranieri could do with his own Bagger Vance. Anyway, they're going around the golf course and he's doing terribly. And he turns to him and he's like, oh my God, this is getting embarrassing. And he turns to him and he's like, oh no, sir. This was embarrassing a long time ago. It's very much like that at Leicester right now. Every defeat just seems to compound the way that people are thinking. It's very difficult to counter the negative analysis because it's not a scattergun approach. It seems like a typical Ranieri approach at this point. In two seasons, you've had what is considered the best of Ranieri and the worst of Ranieri, in that he has a very simple, almost at times seemingly crude idea of how to make a team go out there and set up. You can reduce that down to essentially letting players play on their instinct and letting them play at the very peak of their form, and therefore they can play very well. And then basically finding the transition to being the successful or the hit team in the league, very difficult, which is, I think, what a lot of sides struggle with anyway. He's not the only manager to struggle with that. And they've really struggled with that this season, because I think a lot of people have tactically worked them out, like Dave said, and they haven't changed enough. And then at the same time, they've also come up against a much more difficult league. I think that's what most people are not acknowledging, is this is a strengthened league to what it was in the Premier League last season. So the surprise results that maybe wowed people last season, less so. And actually, Leicester are now the surprise result, but, you know, sort of on the receiving end of that. And that must be quite demoralising for a side that I think all saw this as a big sort of selling point for themselves on the CV, and vice versa. I think it's getting a little bit cliched now at this point to be like, well, they had such a great time last season, they're going to love it this season, even if they go down. It's a bit gratuitous. It's a little bit shit. Like, why would you be so happy with failure if maybe what you're expecting was a sort of a reasonable drop-off? This isn't a reasonable drop-off. This side should still be staying in the league. And it's very unusual as to why not. The biggest issue I think maybe they have right now is they haven't swapped managers. And there are, you know, a number of other sides in the league, not least Swansea, who saw the threat, went out and did what they had to do. I wonder how many... Adam, can I ask you this question? Would you rather have two seasons where you stay in the league and people go, that's great consistency, or win the league and then go out of it?
I don't think any Leicester fans would swap what happened last season, even for relegation this season. I don't think they'd want to negate that. It's, I mean, the problem, as you say, is that so many teams, or a few teams in that position, have made changes and have been somewhat resurgent, like Hull, who are performing well under Marco Silva. And, of course, as you say, Swansea, they're now up to 15th after that win. They're 4 points clear of danger now. They've won three of their last five under Paul Clement. I mean, just what has Carlo Ancelotti's BFF, Dave, what has he done to turn around the fortunes after taking over from friend of the show, Bob Bradley?
I think he's, you know, he's brought back that sort of Swansea-style possession-based football, but he's made them very resolute. Against Manchester City, they really hung in the game. City had quite a few big chances last week, but they stayed in. But what we're seeing is now that they've got that ability to compete against the big boys, but also blow away the little boys in a way. And I'd say that's kind of what happened with someone like Gylfi Sigurdsson in the side from set pieces, and his off-the-ball movement, again, being, you know, clipping the ball into the box for the first goal. It's a real asset. And with Fernando Llorente, again, I've already said this many times on this podcast, he's a really good striker. And now they're starting to reap the rewards of having him in their side. And he's been really good. His hold-up play has been pretty awesome. And I just like the blend of players they've got in there. It's like, you know, their midfield's got a good blend of players. You know, we talk about how Bournemouth, you know, they've got the same player. They just all have, you know, recyclers in there. Swansea, have got a really good blend of players. You know, you've got Cork in there holding, Leroy Fer being a little bit of a goal-scoring threat, more of, you know, an aggressive midfielder. And then Tom Carroll in there, whose form has been fantastic. But the player that's really shone for me is Martin Olsen. I used to think Martin Olsen was rubbish. He was rubbish at Blackburn. But it seems like being in the Championship for a few seasons, he's learned how to defend. He's learned how to use his pace. He always had pace. He's always been good getting forward, but it was his defensively he's been quite poor. And I think what we've seen with Paul Clement, whatever he's done with him in a tactical sense, he's teaching him how to play football in a way. He's teaching him how to defend. And he does keep it quite simple in possession. You know, with the ball at his feet, he's quite direct, and he will, when he gets to the final third, he does cross, but he's doing everything right. And he's a player that I like, players that prove me wrong. And he's a player that's definitely proved me wrong, because when he was signed for Swansea, I sort of turned my nose on that. I thought, yeah, seen him before in the Premier League for Blackburn, wasn't very good. And now, you know, he's really coming into it, and he was fantastic against Leicester.
Prove me wrong, children. Prove me wrong.
All coming up, Milhouse, then, for Swansea at the moment. Another team.
Very good.
Another team gaining points in the battle against relegation, looking quite comfortable now. Burnley earning a point against Chelsea at home. Chelsea missing the chance to go 12 points clear at the top of the Premier League. They have to make do with just the 10 points, unfortunately for them. Dave, talk to me about Sean Dyche. He exploited Chelsea's vulnerability down that left-hand side, did he not?
Yeah, it's a vulnerability, and it, you know, it's something that you potentially could exploit, and they did well. But if you think about the Burnley side, it's more of a unit, and I think they just exploited Chelsea. They defended very, very well. Burnley are very, very difficult to break down. They sit deep. They go very, very long. An interesting stat coming out of the Chelsea game is they completed 63% of their passes. You're looking at an average Premier League team, you're going to hit about 80 to 85, probably 80 to 90, let's say, average pass accuracy. And Burnley, 63%. You know, they were just going long. And it kind of,
it helped them that they were giving Chelsea the ball, because Chelsea have been so good this season, nicking goals and then sitting back and counter-attacking. What Burnley did, even though they went a goal behind, they were just like, right, you have the ball. You have the ball, and then we'll get set pieces, we'll get crosses into the box, and we'll do, you know, a classic English style of football. And Sean Dyche deserves a lot of credit for that. And it more than exploiting the left-hand side, it was more just that they kind of did something that not many teams have done against Chelsea and given them the sort of forcing them to dictate. Matic didn't have the greatest of games because he's been good this season at breaking, destroying, and then getting into that final third. But there's no, with Matic this season, he hasn't been great at playmaking. He's been good in the final third. He's been direct in the final third. But, you know, in that centre of the park, they keep it quite simple. They ship it to the wing-backs, then the ball goes down the flanks. When someone like Burnley puts the responsibility of Chelsea, of Kante and Matic to dictate, that's when Chelsea, you know, have found it a little bit difficult to break people down.
With that in mind then, Dave, is it time for Antonio Conte to give a chance to Cesc Fabregas in the starting lineup? He's only made 5 starts this season under the Italian, but some Chelsea fans were calling for the Spanish midfielder's guile, maybe a bit of his penetration coming in against a team like Burnley, who, as you say, sit back and put the onus on the champions in waiting.
Yeah, 100%. I think Cesc Fabregas has definitely got a role in this potential title-winning season for Chelsea. And I feel that he gives them, like you're saying, it gives them another option. But maybe because Chelsea have been so good with these two central midfielders, you want to throw Fabregas as part of the front three. Great podcast, by the way. You know, you've got Diego Costa in there, who's been a little bit poor in recent weeks. In the last 3 games, he's failed to score a goal. He's only had 1 shot on target. Maybe the card for this game, you know, knowing that Burnley would play a certain style of football, was to throw Fabregas at a false nine, or maybe move Hazard to false nine and move Fabregas to left wing. Obviously, very bold and easier to say in retrospect. But yeah, maybe Fabregas should have come on a little bit earlier than he did in the game. You know, he left it until the 67th minute. In the game, maybe a bold substitution at half time, taking Matic off and bringing Fabregas on. Because we've seen when Fabregas has been on, he's still got that fantastic relationship with Costa, and he could have helped Costa get over this little mini blip in form.
Bit of a goal drought for Diego Costa, as you say, Dave. He's failed to score in 3 consecutive Premier League appearances for the first time since April, May 2016. So there you have it. Did you see the real hero of this game, though? The clip doing the rounds, the Burnley fan. Stopping the wayward shot from Ashley Barnes flying into the face of a toddler. Did you see that one?
No.
Yeah, it was great, mate.
On Twitter these days, where there's a lot of shitty accounts that have like, what, 200, 300,000 subscribers, and you see these followers. Tweets just bounce from one of the accounts. Yeah, followers, sorry, lads. From one of the accounts, another one. Football humour. Oh, did you see this keeper? Did you see the person that was the world?
You don't like to see this act of heroism,
I like it,
Dave?
I love it.
This
I
viral
love it.
Heroism.
The clip's fantastic, but the issue is the people shipping it around just wind me up a little bit.
You're
surely,
right.
Like, it's the first person that identifies this should get all those retweets, but they're not. They're stolen by horrible, filthy accounts. They're nothing but trouble for the internet, Adam.
You're right in that when I did see this clip, it did pop up on 10 different accounts, all with the copy, if
the
you
same,
will, of
the same
what
copy.
Is it? Not all heroes wear capes, it said. I think it was at Bearded Genius who originally tweeted it out. He got quite a fair few retweets, but of course, Footy Bants came in. Footy Humour, as you said, they sort of tweeted out. Stolen, mate.
It's almost like people are paid almost nothing in order to retweet things.
Yeah.
Something we've seen before, and something that a few accounts I know and have worked with in the past get very angry about people just copy and pasting, and it's pathetic. What do you get paid for? You get paid for to create content. So fucking create content and stop fucking copying people.
Sorry. Not sure they do get paid to create content. I'm pretty sure they do actually get paid to do exactly what they're doing, Dave. They get paid for, Adam, you know this phrase. You went to the same university as me. Journalism.
Journalism, mate. It's what it's all about.
It's all about journalism in the modern day. That's what the Evening Standard built on.
Got to put food on the table, you know.
Something without like this, we couldn't do the serious stories. All right, fair enough, mate.
Let's talk about Arsenal 2, Hull City 0. Arsenal winning at home again. They've lost just twice in the Premier League at the Emirates this season against Liverpool and Chelsea. Hull didn't give a bad account of themselves, Dave. They're somewhat unlucky, potentially. It was a handball, depending on your viewpoint, for Alexis Sanchez's opener. You know, where's the line on that one? I don't know. His hand was coming up. It wasn't on purpose, but his hand did happen to knock the ball into the net, which is probably a handball. I'm not really sure.
So I find it like it was a difficult decision for the officials, unfortunately, because the angle that the linesman had, the angle that the referee had, unfortunately, Sanchez's body blocked out the view. And I understand why the goal was given, and I don't think there's anything you can really do. It's just one of those things. You know, swings and roundabouts. The only thing that you could do to sort that out, obviously, is video technology, which would be great for the game of football. So, I'm all for that. But, yeah, Hull City were really good again, and they deserved more than they got from this Arsenal game. Again, Kieran Gibbs should probably have been sent off. If you've seen the incident,
I think 100%.
Markovic had a fantastic game, actually. Strange that Liverpool have lacked... Yeah, I've lacked a lively attacker without Sadio Mane, and Markovic is at Hull. Obviously, it's different because he's getting game time and so forth.
Yeah, he's got a manager that's the same player.
But it was really good. Really, really caused some trouble. And Nias, if he was a little bit better in terms of his movement and timing, probably should have scored twice. But Arsenal got the job done, and unfortunately, that's what Arsenal have done for the last X amount of years that they've got this Champions League record going. You know, the fourth place. This is classic Arsenal. Play poorly, get the result.
What about the performance of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain? He was relatively impressive himself. With those injuries in midfield, with that lack of options, do you think that's potentially his future position, Dave, under Arsene Wenger? Or do you think he's not the man for that role?
This is the problem with English football. This is the issue. That a player that should be playing right midfield or left midfield, he's a winger, he's direct, he runs at people, he's quick, he's pacey, he can cross, is shoehorned into central midfield. Personally, thought he was quite poor. Personally, someone like Santi Cazorla comes back, see you later, Ox, you're out the side. Someone like Xhaka comes back, Ox is out the side. You know, this is only because he has to be there. This is it. It's one of those things where because Oxlade-Chamberlain hasn't been given a consistent position, he's shoehorned into all these other positions and it's costing him. Danny Murphy just infuriated me last night on Match of the Day 2. There was a clip, right, that he was analysing. They were analysing. They were like going, oh, that was a really good pass. The pass was absolutely rubbish. You know, it was just a pass into the final third that a lot of players could have made. Then they moved the clip on and it went, oh, okay, here's him, you know, nicking the ball. I love his energy in central midfield. I love him, like how he drives. You tell me, right, central midfielders in world football that at that peak of their game, the peak playmakers in world football don't carry the ball like that. They play the pass because they know moving the ball quicker with not at their feet is a better option for their team. You're thinking like players like Pjanic, any other decent playmaker in world football moves it quickly. So they highlighted this clip where the ball breaks in central midfield and Chamberlain accelerates onto the ball. He accelerates past the whole midfield. He's behind the midfield. Something that Arsenal struggled with was getting behind the whole midfield. He accelerated, and he had a shot from about 30 yards that P rolled into the keeper's hands. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on in your head in terms of decision making? That is atrocious. Danny Murphy's like, yeah, fantastic. That's what we want to see more from the Ox. Driving through midfield, you're thinking, that is a total shite, Danny Murphy. And, yeah, again, frustrating me pundits this season. First, I believe Marco Silva, who has turned Hull around. The crazy thing was that as well. Something that came up back watching that whole game was the just before the game started, the commentator was like, yeah, Marco Silva's won at Arsenal before. His Olympiakos side beat Arsenal 3-2 in the Champions League. Paul Merson's supposed to be an Arsenal expert, having been at the club. And he didn't even think about that. Anyway.
Dave Rance.
I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure Paul Merson remembers those years. Yeah.
Dave, you're going off on Twitter accounts, you're going off on pundits. I like this. The passion.
Pundits are really annoying me lately. Like, they're just like, when you actually analyse what they're doing, you think, shit, why are you in the studio? What are you doing, mate?
That's what they're doing.
Exactly. Why can't I get some wedge? Why can't you get some wedge, Baldwin? Lawrence, why can't you? Why can't Chris get wedge? Why can't we just have wedge, right?
It is definitely worth addressing one thing. One phrase I've heard consistently over the last week is, and see, I always find a little bit unusual, is everyone says, everyone's entitled to their opinion. Now, yeah, I totally get that. And I understand that. And
that was Gary Neville's big point, that he was criticising people who responded, you can't criticise me because we're giving our opinion. But Gary Neville was like, but I'm allowed to give my opinion on your opinion, you know?
I think this is the part of the problem is people get lots of things, free speech and sort of the discourse that goes on in that space sort of mistaken for, you know, if I have an opinion, therefore it is truth. Or, you know, it must be valid in some way. I think the problem is, you know, I mean, even on our podcast, I think a lot of places, and especially in sport, like there's not very much recognition that most people are speaking from their own perspective, and therefore it probably is quite a flawed area, or there's a flaw in it in some way. I think a lot of people, what a lot of pundits are trying to do, and a lot of networks try to speak from a quite final point of view to make it look like, oh, we need to argue, or the debate needs to go on. I think everyone's getting a little bit lost in that right now in a football space where you have to be right. And I agree, there has to be something you can quantify it with. But I often, I guess I just get frustrated with everyone being like, I'm entitled to my opinion. Yeah, and I think you're right, Adam. Your original point comes back there. I'm entitled to disagree with that. Do you know what I mean? I think people think as long as you have an opinion, it's right.
You're right that there's a conflation between an opinion, the truth, and facts. Just because you have an opinion doesn't mean it's right, doesn't mean that it is an absolute truth. People seem to confuse those two positions. Yeah. It's a post-Trump world, mate. It's a post-facts world, you know? We're living in it.
But this
opinions
been
are truth.
For quite a long time. I mean, you know, but it's again worth saying, like, what happens on the, it's so weird to watch. What happens on the back pages always end up on the front pages in the end. And, you know, we're seeing it quite a lot at the moment. You know, a lot of YouTube accounts, a lot of people like that are gaining more of a voice on the right wing and on the left wing. And arguably, because there's no sort of, not regulation, I'm not arguing for sort of government control, but because there's no one in there sort of say, well, that's not really a fair thing to say, or I don't know, how can you quantify that? And there's not really anyone picking them up on any mistakes. Everyone's just sort of saying, well, I'm allowed to be here. You know, because you're in the bourgeoisie or you're in the middle bit, you're no better than I am. And I agree with that. But at the same time, there's got to be some sort of middle ground. There doesn't seem to be much middle ground on, you know, you're either for the BBC or you're against the BBC. You're either for Sky Sports or you're against Sky Sports. You know, you're either for Arsenal Fan TV or you're against Arsenal.
Oh, yeah, everything's
and
very black
lot,
and white.
A lot of people, yeah, like, but a lot of people who listen
where
to this
actually
probably,
gray.
And yeah, most people probably, in fact, I think everyone falls into the grey area. But it's just very difficult, I think, most of the time. And that's maybe why we do a podcast, is because most podcasts are grey. You know what I mean?
Let's,
Andy Gray.
Let's talk about Arsenal before we get too many tweets complaining. We're talking too much about politics on
the
a football
media.
Podcast. Arsenal, of course, next up, Dave, Bayern Munich. Perhaps a real measure of the side. They're expected to beat Hull at home. They should be beating Hull at home. This is the big one. This is the one where fans are going to want to see Arsenal step up and actually do something in this competition.
Oh, not at all. Carlo Ancelotti is so good at the Champions League. He just knows how to do the Champions League. It's just
Has
one
he
of those
completed
things.
It, Dave?
He's completed it three times, Lawrence. He could. No. I reckon he'll complete it four times, maybe this year. And I feel that
four times in 1 year.
He'll attack Arsenal where they don't want to be attacked. He'll break them down. Thiago has been so good at sort of attacking central midfield this season. In terms of interceptions and turnovers, he's really evolved his game. He's won the ball back more times in terms of interceptions than any other player in the Bundesliga this year. So he's going to be a threat and nicking the ball where Arsenal don't want it. And as soon as he's nicked the ball, bang, they're going to counterattack. How do you kill Arsenal? You hit him on the break. And that's what Bayern will probably do, which will be a completely different sort of strategy and tactic to what they were doing for the last few seasons under Guardiola. So it's going to be a different Bayern Munich beast in the knockout stages with players like Ribery, Robin, Costa. There's a lot of pace there, and that's the field where Arsenal will get done. Then you've got Lewandowski playing some of the best football of his career. So there's a lot of things that's going to work out for, that's working out for Bayern. And then you think of Arsenal, they've got no one in central midfield. Again, this could be a game where I did criticise the Ox before, but playing a three-man midfield with the Ox in there so he can pressurise the Bayern players could be quite good to have that energy in that side.
They're going to need people in that. They're going to need people and energy in that midfield, aren't they? And when I say energy, I mean they're going to need people who are going to press and try and pressure Bayern into playing, not in the way that in the way that Bayern don't feel comfortable. I've not watched enough of Bayern this season to know essentially how well they're playing. But still, they're going to need people to pressure. And that's maybe what Arsenal are lacking right now, is someone who's renowned for doing that. They have players that are maybe capable of it, but no one who seems tactically intelligent enough to do it for a full, you know, 70 or 80 minutes, however long you need them to do it.
I think that's kind of the problem with, in a way, not having great balance in the squad in terms of defensive midfield players.
Yeah.
Not in terms of central, in terms of wide areas. Like, you think of someone like Walcott will probably stay high up the pitch. If Sanchez plays wide, he stays high up the pitch. If Ozil stays, it plays attacking midfield or plays wide, doesn't really defend. Sanchez, for all the great work Sanchez does in a defensive sense in pressing, he's really, really bad at getting back into shape.
And it's one of those things where Arsenal cannot afford to do that.
Can I just say one thing?
Go on, Lawrence. One thing.
Dave, what's the temperature in London right now?
It's a bit cold, to be honest.
It's 9 degrees.
Mild, now, I'd say. Mild
at best. Mm. There's an ice cream van outside my window.
Yeah, I did just hear that. So, what are you thinking? Are you going to go for Mr. Whippy?
What do you want? What do you want, Adam? Do you want a screwball?
It'll stay cold. It's not going to melt anytime soon. I guess that's the plus point.
Well, no, I'll be able to get it all the way to your house.
Oh, fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah, make it a 99p flake. Love it. While I'm waiting for that, let's talk about Palace losing again at Stoke City. Disappointing. another defeat, Dave, for Sam Allardyce's side. Failing once again to keep a clean sheet. It's supposed to be his speciality. He's trying different formations, but doesn't seem to be working for the big man, does it, Dave?
Adam, you highlighted a great point there. He's trying a number of different formations. Something that we've mentioned last week, we mentioned the week before. It takes time for Sam Allardyce to get his football across to players, but he is tweaking, he is trying, and I feel that he will come up with a system. Feel like potentially he may need to throw another worker into central midfield. At the moment, Punchin's been playing there with two sort of more physical midfielders, so maybe chucking another guy in there. But it's all about work, and it's all about the end game of getting those clean sheets, and I feel like it will eventually tick. But again, they got caught out. They do need to start doing it. We are in February. We are in Feb, so maybe there is a time that Sam needs to start going, and I will have to start criticising. But at the moment, I'm still giving him his sort of teething time, his adapting time. Well, let me just quickly flip over to Sunderland last season when Big Sam was manager. So it flipped for them in March. So March the 1st, they went on they lost one game in the last X amount of fixtures. What was it, like 10 games? Yeah, the last 10 games, they only lost one game. And that's from March. So Sam has still got, we can criticise Sam. We're allowed to criticise Sam. Well, I'll criticise.
To March the 1st.
On March the 2nd.
Yeah, that's Sam, the one day.
March 2nd. And until then,
Sam Allardyce criticism
Sam fans
day.
Can continue to hate me.
Palace have won 7 of their last 46 league games.
Wow. Are you saying that as a good or a bad thing? Because actually, in many ways, considering what the club's going through,
you can interpret these facts as you will, post-fact era.
My alternate Pardew.
What about Stoke, Lawrence? Up to 9th now. They've actually finished in that position in the last 3 years in a row under Mark Hughes. Is that impressive consistency? Or is there a case to be made that maybe he's almost peaked as Stoke boss, that he's hit a certain ceiling?
After a certain amount of time, you could sort of say, well, you're one of the 9 best teams in the country. That's still a pretty big achievement. I guess he as a manager will still feel that he would like to take them further. They've invested money. They've given him he essentially does have at least a portion of the squad that he probably wants now. He's been given the time to turn this team around. The problem with Stoke is there's too many times where you think, you could have gone further than this, but you haven't. And the reasons behind that do seem to be tactically based in where Mark Hughes has been outthought or outmaneuvered by another manager. His system has let him down. And I think ultimately that's part of the problem with Mark Hughes is that he never managed to find the biting point between system and the people playing it. If you go through that starting 11 for Stoke just the other day, they've still got a few players in there from the previous regime. They've still got people who you say would represent that. Shawcross, Crouch arguably, Charlie Adam, and maybe even someone like Bardsley. They've got a couple of Mark Hughes players in around that. I think he's done very well to make this side and turn that side around to play some more beautiful football. But I think they always had it in them. That's what makes me think a club's always going to roll the dice with Mark Hughes because they think, well, we've got this, but we could have Marco Silva, someone who's going to maybe and potentially take them a step further, or Mauricio Pochettino, someone who's potentially going to take them up to the next level.
Speaking of Stoke, we have got to talk about Tony Pulis. He came out after the West Brom 2, West Ham 2 draw in his post-match. What are we calling this whole situation? Voicemail gate, should we call it? Not the catchiest of titles. But as I'm saying, West Brom, of course, they stole a draw thanks to Gareth McCauley's last-minute header, 2-0 against West Ham. continuing their impressive form. They've only been beaten once in the last seven games now, but the result was overshadowed by this whole story, this whole very confusing story that has erupted. Apparently, he came out after the game. He came out after the game this weekend and basically said it was absolutely disgraceful the way Stoke City have spun claims from Mark Hughes, essentially, that he said in his press conference on Friday that Tony Pulis left Ryan Shawcross a voicemail calling Shawcross a loser. Not quite sure why Mark Hughes revealed this in his pretty much press conference. Tony Pulis has not taken it well. He was apparently ringing up Ryan Shawcross to say he's anything but a loser. All just seems absolutely ridiculous, really confusing. I don't know what's going on. But Tony Pulis,
has this voicemail been released?
No.
Please tell me it's been released.
I don't think it's been released. No, it's something that Mark Hughes seemed to make public, the contents of that voicemail, on Friday. I'm assuming Ryan Shawcross told Mark Hughes. But this was on over all the newspaper websites, on all football websites, you know, talking about this issue. Tony Pulis has obviously addressed it, and I still don't understand what is going on.
I guess he must have called him. He must have gone into a tunnel, and then just the words that he didn't want seem to have rearranged themselves into an order. We all know it happens on Skype. There are times, so for instance, Adam, I could go, you know, I think you're an absolutely loser.
And you hear
is, I think you're an absolutely loser. Now, you can take that however you may, but I'm muted when I said opposite of a...
Lawrence, so, you are such a...
Yeah, Dave, you've got to complete the game. You're not quite getting the game there, Dave.
I was still on mute, Lawrence. I was still insulting you. Sorry, buddy.
My mistake. You absolute cunt.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sorry. The problem is that Mark Hughes is a stickler for manners, Adam. Now, we all know this, because if Mark Hughes does not get his hand shaken, he will go on about it and on about it and on about it for days. The other day, there was a quote released in memory said, "I'm a guest in their stadium, and if they don't make me feel welcome, it's their fault."
I just thought, manners. I like it.
You really are. Yeah, he's basically asking for basic manners. And what he's done there is he's gone outside of basic manners. It's very not. It's not cool to call someone to tell them, "I don't think you're a loser."
Loser is such a weird. Why would you even call someone a loser anyway? It's a bit Donald Trump, isn't it? It's a strange insult.
I was just calling to say
loser.
Just calling to say, "I don't think you're a loser." Well, no, I didn't think I was. No, I was just saying, "I don't think you're a loser."
Yeah.
Oh. Thanks.
It's just a bizarre situation. Voicemail gate continues to rumble on. I'm sure we'll hear more about it in the coming weeks, of course.
Maybe it's reverse psychology.
Maybe. Wait, how?
Where he's calling him and he's going, "Oh, I've heard what everyone else has been saying." And Ryan Shawcross is like, what? And he's like, "Oh, don't listen to him."
Yeah,
he's like, what are they saying?
I like that.
And he's like, "Well, I don't want to tell you, mate, but you're not a loser." And he's like, "Wait, what?" And then he's like, "See ya." Saito, you're not a loser.
Let's talk Manchester United continuing their remarkable unbeaten run. What's it up to now, Dave? 18 games? 19 games?
16, I think, in the league.
Wow, so incredible. They've
the best record in Europe's top five leagues, only in league. So they did lose, obviously, to Hull City.
Mm.
But apart from that, Adam, they're fine.
2-0 against
Feels like
Watford.
19.
Amazing home form as well, has to be said, at Old Trafford now. After the game, Mourinho singling out the performance of Paul Pogba Dave. Do you think he's now starting to show his best for Manchester United?
I think Mourinho highlighted Pogba's performance because he played him deeper in defensive midfield in a two behind a band of three attacking midfielders. And Pogba played well because, for me, Paul Pogba this season, he's been in spells of games, he's been really, really good. But other times he's been really frustrating of how he uses the ball, he uses it too slowly for a central midfielder. But what we're seeing in defensive midfield is he's making the right decisions. And I think that's why Mourinho's come out and he's supporting his player, because Pogba made the right decisions against Watford. He played a number of great balls over the top. He moved forward at the right time. He had a great chance within the Watford area, which he didn't put away. But it was the decisions that he was making that it was so impressive. When to tackle, when to sit, when to hold. His relationship with Herrera was really good. And I liked it. I really liked that Mourinho's sort of maybe taking a little bit of hype off Paul Pogba, noticing that maybe the media has put a little bit of pressure on him, obviously with the money and so forth, and been like, okay, Pogba, you sit a bit deeper. We'll let Mkhitaryan, we'll let Martial, we'll let Juan Mata, those guys create. Pogba, you just do your job as a central midfielder. Because I think that for Pogba right now, 23 years old, consistency-wise, isn't creating at a level that you'd want when you've got someone like Mkhitaryan at attacker midfield. Play Mkhitaryan, let Paul Pogba sit a bit deeper and be that link man, and allow Pogba to do that. Maybe he's looking for next season when United sign Antoine Griezmann, Adam.
Of course.
There's a great,
of course.
Is there something on the Front for YouTube channel that you've got to go and check out about Griezmann moving to Manchester United?
Go and check out the scout report.
Just leave
go
it.
Go and check it out.
Dave, you're such a Kool-Aid drinker. Sorry, the media putting pressure on Paul Pogba. He's got his own emoji. The media being the media that he gets paid by.
Lawrence, he's one of my tribe, all right? I get to defend him if I want.
Also, I think it's very unusual that Paul Pogba can't put toxic green or whatever it is in his hair, but Sadio Mane can and get away with it. It's not fair.
Yes, mate.
It's just not fair.
It's not fair.
On Zlatan watch, Dave, didn't score. I'm sure everyone will be glad to know, especially me and my girlfriend.
Well, glad.
But he's come out and talked about the contract
he's
situation.
He's going to walk next to you, hasn't he?
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, for on most days, yeah, let alone with the bleach hair. But the Swede came out after the game. Of course, we know he's scored enough goals to activate that one-year extension in his contract. Mourinho has talked about how he wants him to stay for that second year. Ibrahimovic raising some question marks, though, Dave, after this game.
So it was a real mixed bag for Ibrahimovic against Watford. Like, creativity wise, he was really, really good. Created six chances in the game. The whole Watford team combined managed seven, so it was just one fewer than the whole team. He was really good. His hold up play was really good in spells. The ball was going to him. It was sticking. He was working the ball out to the wide areas. It was really good. And what Zlatan suits is playing a 4-2-3-1 at the moment in his career, because he's getting to the latter stages. He needs a bit of legs around him. He needs a bit of pace to go ahead of him. And in the 4-2-3-1, Mkhitaryan's given him that. And it's looking really good. And if you look at the stats, when United have played a 4-2-3-1, Zlatan has created over four chances in each one of those games. So moving on to his finishing, which was the issue for a lot of fans showing their frustration. Adam, have you been speaking to him? Because there were two chances that he missed from inside the six-yard box that he, one of them went out for a throw-in and the other one was straight at the goalkeeper. No, so maybe he's heard of our bet and sacked it off.
Have you been leaving voicemails for him, Adam?
No, I've just recently converted to every religion and have been praying hard. And obviously the gods have answered, you know? So it's
pretty sure that's counter to every religion, Adam.
Mate, it's desperate times, desperate measures has to be done. You know?
Are you sure it isn't that you knew that he had this clause in his contract? So as soon as he hit that, he'd be like, I can just chill now. Don't need more than 15 goals. I've done it. Illuminati confirmed.
In many ways, yes. Let's move on to the final fixture of the weekend. Middlesbrough, once again, failing to score a 0-0 draw at home with Everton. 10th draw this season for iTalk Rankers side, Dave. The most in the Premier League. Again, you know, looking good at the back, but they've only netted 19 times this season in total. Again, the lowest in the league, and without a win in eight, it leaves them firmly in the relegation battle. They're getting sucked in, aren't they, Dave?
They are, yeah, definitely. They're part of it in terms of goals. They've been pathetic. They need to find their Gary Goals of the squad and hopefully get a few goals out of him. But I think it's the style of football and how it all comes together. They are a defensive side, and they do defend very, very well. They just need to, Karanka needs to free them up. In an attacking sense, you could potentially look at Monaco. Apart from this season, where they've scored a hatful of goals, we'll probably talk about them a little bit later on. They defensively were very, very good, but they couldn't find how to attack together. And then Yardim has freed them up this season. The fullbacks go forward a lot higher. Maybe it's something that Karan could do a slight tactical tweak, which could get them some goals.
Let's hope so, because what's the opposite of coming up Milhouse? Everything's coming up Milhouse. Everything's coming up.
Everything's Principal Skinner.
Principal Skinner. He's always on Skinner. He's always on the losing end.
Karan Kerr.
Let's talk Sunderland. Hammered, smashed, obliterated, cowabungered by Southampton. 4-0, pumped at an empty stadium, and now they're off to the USA, Lawrence. So every cloud has a silver lining, maybe, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, unless it's a volcanic cloud, those are just dark.
And it is a volcanic cloud because they're going down, essentially.
Yeah, although volcanoes tend to erupt upwards. So find a new...
Make of that what you will.
...analogy. Dickhead. I think... So basically, I think Sunderland went into this feeling very confident with themselves and maybe underestimated what was going to happen. You know, the previous game, they won that one 4-0. They managed to get a great result against Spurs. And it felt as if they'd turned a corner after arguably three or four difficult results. I think they lost three in a row and drew twice in the previous five. So they're on somewhat of a high. I think they came to Southampton expecting something quite different. And this Southampton side are really coming together tactically now. They also came up against Gabbiadini, who hit them for six very early on. And then in the second half, they actually did get their shit together. But it was too late by then. They were 2-0 down and the game essentially was already lost. And as much as, you know, they tried to battle their way back into it, basically later on Southampton hit them and made it look like much more of a generous scoreline, should we say, than it originally should have been.
The squad just isn't up to it, is it, Dave? I mean, we saw Jermaine Defoe crowned Player of the Year at the North East Football Writers Award this weekend. But as Stephen Gerrard said, without him, you know, where would they be?
Yeah, where would they be? And I think it's going to be such a test for David Moyes. If David Moyes keeps this side up, it'll be, you know, nearing on a miracle. And it's
his greatest achievement, perhaps.
Yeah, probably his greatest achievement.
He's only 3 points off Middlesbrough at this point. So, you know.
It's tight down there. It is tight, those bottom six. But I think, for me, Sunderland, I can't see a way out of them. I think, as we were saying earlier, with regards to Swansea and Hull, there is that feeling of momentum with these teams. There is that change that seems to have improved matters. With Sunderland, I think it was a false dawn, those two results that you mentioned, Lawrence.
They do also have two difficult games coming up. But then I think so in the two games after this, they've also got Everton and then Man City. But then after that, there are a series of games where you think there are points there for you. There's a Middlesbrough, there's Burnley. I was going to say they're playing Sunderland, which should be easy. They're playing Burnley, Watford, Leicester, and then that's capped by Manchester United. So there's a lot. There's still a lot of points up for grabs. Essentially, the problem for them is, or a good thing for them is, they finish the season at Chelsea. So if it is still tight by that point, you'll have expected that Chelsea may have already won the league, and therefore it's going to be a bit of a different day.
As for Southampton,
I'm calling it now.
As for Southampton, they remain in 11th, Dave. Some awful form they've been on. Out of the last eight games, they've lost six of them. They finally won a game here against Sunderland. Problems in defence, of course, for them. Going forward now with Manolo Gabbiadini there is a shrewd signing that can potentially get them the goals to win games.
Yeah, well, since Charlie Austin went out injured, they really lacked a striker that was scoring goals. Shane Long coming in, not doing too great. And other players sort of fill in there, but just not really performing at the same level that Charlie Austin was. But Gabbiadini looks so, so bright. His movement looks fresh. His touch for the second goal was absolutely incredible. It was a real bit of world-class talent there on show. And if he can consistently perform like that, you may catch a few sides out. You see this sometimes in January where a team brings in a forward that not a lot of people have done their homework on, and he catches them out for the rest of the season. Then next season will be a real test for him to see whether he is at that quality. But, you know, I expect him fully to score a few goals for them.
Let's briefly preview tonight's fixture then. Monday Night Football, Bournemouth versus Manchester City. Bournemouth without a win in their last five, Dave. Also shipping goals, 16 in their past five league games. It will be interesting to see a few selection questions, Pep Guardiola. Number one, the goalkeeper. whether he's going to stick with Willy Caballero or return Claudio Bravo in between the sticks. And of course, Sergio Aguero ahead of the game. Once again, his future dominating the headlines with Guardiola bringing up question marks over Aguero's long-term future at the club.
Yeah, I think there's two big questions there. First up, I think Caballero is going to stay in goal. Unfortunately, Bravo is just not at the same levels that he had at Barcelona. His shot stopping is the real weird one. Like before, he was good. He's a good shot stopper, but it just seems a season confidence or something's going wrong with him. In terms of Aguero, Gabriel Jesus, unfortunately, has been too good and suits Guardiola's system a lot more than the Argentinian international. And you see his return so far for Manchester City, 3 goals and an assist in the Premier League. Why would you not play him? He looks like he's the part. He links up with Sané and Sterling very, very well. So, yeah, I'd keep both of them in, Caballero and, of course, our pal Jesus.
Our pal, eh?
Our pal Jesus.
Let's talk the action from around Europe then in part two. First up, let's go to Simon Harrison, football writer, to get a roundup on La Liga. We're joined now by football writer Simon Harrison to talk the weekend's La Liga action. Simon, welcome to the front three.
Thank you for having me. I mean, first time for everything, and hopefully we can get something going. I mean, I think people need to be paying really close attention to La Liga this season. It's all set up for what should be a fantastic second half of the season.
It is shaping up very nicely. This weekend, of course, Atletico Madrid reclaiming fourth spot. They left it late, though, for a 3-2 win over Celta Vigo. But everyone's talking about that Fernando Torres goal after the game, aren't they, Simon?
Well, I'd love to say that it had been coming, but really, it kind of showed the underlying quality of a man who really hasn't had it all his own way. It was obviously an absolutely outrageous thing to attempt. And I think probably most of the people inside the Calderon and on Twitter would have expected it to end up in Row Z. But obviously, he's come up roses. He's scored a couple of other goals recently, albeit against, you know, this season he's not really been banging them in. He's scored a couple against Sporting and Leganes, I think. And obviously, it's not the Torres of old. But it is kind of throwing the question out there of whether he deserves a new deal at the end of the season. Did they just let it run out? I think he is probably of the opinion that they can't really afford to accommodate him anymore. But obviously there is that romanticism around El Nino. And I think it was quite fitting, really, that a goal which threatened to be a consolation goal, a beautiful consolation goal, but it was good to see that they had that comeback and it gave a bit more significance to what could be one of the last great goals that we do see from Torres playing football for Atletico Madrid.
A good win for them. They're now 7 games unbeaten in the league. However, they only remain a point above Sociedad. They themselves continued their push for that fourth and final Champions League spot. It was a 2-1 victory for them over Espanyol.
Yeah, I mean, that was a fantastic result because Espanyol were kind of in unknown territory in terms of how many good results they managed to string together recently. Kike Sanchez Flores, he's got an organised team. They all sing off the same hymn sheet. Obviously, we've seen that at Watford in the Premier League, he had kind of a malleable 4-4-2, and he's kind of sticking with the same thing at Espanyol. So, I mean, just to beat Espanyol on the form that they're in was a fantastic result. The injury to William Jose could be a big one. It's going to be a big, big ask for Juanmi to step up and contribute the goals that Brazilian has managed to this season. But with Real Sociedad, I have quite liked this season. They've got some really talented players. And also, even when they went behind to Osasuna last week, there is that kind of, they're in the form and obviously they're in fifth place. And the confidence that comes along with that is that if they do go a goal behind, they don't really worry about it. They kind of have that belief that if they just keep playing how they're playing, something will come out of it. And I think that's quite a powerful tool to have when you're against a lot of different teams that are kind of in the mix for European football this season. And a little bit of confidence can really maybe be the difference between you finishing fifth or maybe further down in seventh and kind of missing out.
Before we get to the big two, we obviously have to talk about Sevilla, of course. They remain in third place. They got back on track with a 1-0 win at Las Palmas, Simon.
Yeah, it has really been, for me, the summer transfer business that Sevilla did. Obviously, bringing in Sampoli was a huge coup, I think. But also, the fact that they've packed their squad out with so much talent and so much talent in offensive areas, it's really, it's something that I think that Atletico Madrid are kind of missing this season. Even when things aren't going right and they're kind of just trading blows and grinding these games down to sort of like a tight finish in the last 20 minutes or so, they've got such depth on the bench. It's actually quite crazy. I mean, you had Joaquin Correa scoring his first goal, I think it was, for Sevilla, an all-important goal against Las Palmas. And you've also got players like Sarabia who have regularly come off the bench to fantastic effect. And I think that given that Sevilla's starting lineup is as good as anyone's potentially in La Liga on their day, it's really a useful tool to have these players coming on fresh, coming on with confidence, and coming on with the kind of track record to prove that Sampaoli's not just bringing them on to add some fresh legs. He actually believes they can make that difference. And in the run-in for whether it be third place, second place, wherever they end up sort of finishing up at the end of the season, I mean, they have got quite a bit on the bench that maybe the likes of Barcelona and the likes of Atletico Madrid kind of wish that they had themselves.
As for Barcelona, they remained second. They did go top ever so briefly, but it was a comfortable 6-0 win over Alaves for them. Goals for each of the MSN, including two for Suarez, but the win was somewhat soured by a nasty-looking injury for Alex Vidal.
Yeah, I mean, that scoreline, obviously, it's fantastic and good for the confidence for Barcelona to smash a team like Alaves for that scoreline. But it didn't really tell the whole story. Alaves had a sort of crazy 10-20 minute period where they just completely fell apart. I think it kind of gives a false representation of what the Copa del Rey final might be like, because obviously those two teams will clash again before the end of the season, especially given the fact that Alaves went to Camp Nou and got a surprise 2-1 win earlier on in the campaign. The Vidal injury, it's a real shame, because Enrique, he's been tinkering around with his like midfield three, he's been rotating quite a bit, he's been ensuring that the likes of Vidal or Paco Alcacer, Denis Suarez, even though there have been some injuries, he's been trying to ensure that everyone has a reasonable amount of minutes to kind of keep everything ticking over. And Vidal had suddenly become this player who was a really sort of like a poster boy for the fact that Enrique could look at him and kind of say, well, I've been giving him a chance. Everyone thought he was written off, and suddenly he's sort of this new regenerated character. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of pick themselves up from him getting injured. They've got Sergio Roberto, who's obviously done well in a new position this season, but he will be suspended for the Copa del Rey final in the coming months. So it might be interesting to see who they end up replacing Vidal with at right back. Javier Mascherano has played there very, very briefly, but really, I'm sure that Luis Enrique would rather have scraped a 1-0 win over Alaves and still had Vidal fit. So it's obviously great for the confidence in terms of getting people on the score sheet, but he's a valuable player to have lost at a quite important time of the season.
I mean, you mentioned the rotation there. What have you made of some of the criticism there has been for Luis Enrique recently? Obviously, a lot of games in recent weeks for his side, but some fans grumbling over his team selections in recent weeks.
It's quite a tough one, because obviously he's got to keep people fresh, he's got to give people a chance, but I think the way that he has been rotating, he's had so many different trios between the likes of Iniesta, Busquets, Rakitic, Denis Suarez, Rafinha. I mean, he's had so many different combinations that it can come across, and I mean, I've been perhaps guilty of kind of going down the same route occasionally myself, in that, does he know his best team? Does he have like a firm vision of what his best 11 would be on any given day? And obviously, rotation comes along with that sort of as a parallel. They've been quite unlucky with injuries. So obviously, Iniesta has spent some time out. Busquets recently has spent some time out. But I don't know. I mean, you were kind of seeing with Alex Vidal, like I said, you were seeing how giving the players who are kind of on the fringe an opportunity to impress, he was kind of the poster boy saying that, well, Enrique was kind of right to do this. And when you look at the likes of Real Madrid, obviously, they've got two games in hand, and their fixture congestion could come the end of the season could be pretty crazy, to be honest. And it might come down to the fact that the teams who keep their best 11 the fittest might come out on top. So obviously Barcelona, they've got quite a big gap to close. It could go up to 7 points, but it's definitely not the end of story or anything like that yet. And if you have Real Madrid playing a few of these games in quick succession, and they might not pick up the results that they're after, then if Enrique has been keeping people fresh and he's got a nice big pool of players to choose from, I mean, Barcelona really can't rule themselves out of anything at the moment.
Obviously, this week the focus turns to Europe. Barcelona facing Paris Saint-Germain for the third time, I believe, in the past four Champions League campaigns. They have knocked out the French champions on those previous two occasions, but going into this one, PSG are on good form ahead of the first leg in Paris, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. Obviously, as you've said, it's something where it's sort of almost a groan goes out when it comes out of the hat. It's been so regular recently. And the other interesting aspect of it is the fact, obviously, that Unai Emery, he's been pitting himself against Barcelona for the last few years, I mean, with Sevilla. And obviously, he knows what it takes to get to the final stages of big competitions. Obviously, it was the Europa League, so the little brother, as it were, I suppose, of the Champions League. But he'll be knowing how to set his team up. He's got Cavani in probably the best form that PSG fans probably could have hoped for coming into the game. But also, Barcelona, they do have a lot of players fit and raring to go. Neymar has looked a lot better in recent weeks. And obviously, you can never rule out Messi and Suarez getting in on the act. And I think it will be interesting because, obviously, PSG, it's kind of, with you saying earlier how there's been criticism of Enrique this season, it's been sort of the same with Emery. I mean, you had Gregorz Krakowiak, who obviously was fantastic for Sevilla under Emery. He's kind of gone there, not proven himself. You've had Hesse go there from Real Madrid. He's ended up now at Las Palmas on loan. And I think there are grumblings in terms of a lack of confidence in Emery. And really, the pressure is going to ramp up on him massively if PSG can't get to the later stages of the Champions League, because there was kind of this sense that Emery's going there with that sole purpose in mind. And perhaps even though PSG has become synonymous with Ligue 1 titles, maybe they'd kind of put that to the back of their minds to focus on the Champions League. So if Barcelona, I would say they'd probably be happy to just kind of even take a narrow defeat or take a draw at Parc des Princes, and then the pressure on Emery will be absolutely huge to deliver, because there's almost the sense that, say, if PSG don't pick up a good result in the first leg, then everything in this season is riding on that game. And Barcelona, I mean, they've been in those high-pressure situations before. They've got to finals, they've won trophies under Enrique, even when they thought it wouldn't be possible to improve on past managers' records. And PSG haven't got that history, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I think the second leg, as long as someone isn't blown out of the water in the first leg, the second leg is going to be the one which is going to have all of the talking points around it.
As for Real Madrid, they end their weekend top once again. As you said, they still got two games in hand. It was a 3-1 victory for Los Blancos at Osasuna. Not as comfortable as the scoreline suggests, perhaps, but of course, an intriguing tie with Napoli coming up on Wednesday. Zinedine Zidane saying he's hopeful that Gareth Bale will be able to play some part and potentially return in time, having been out since November with an ankle injury.
Yeah, I mean, Alvaro Morata has already said that, you know, that Real Madrid need to kind of look out for Napoli. He knows them from his time at Juve. And obviously under Sarri, they're playing this scintillating counter-attacking football where if Real Madrid maybe take their foot off the gas, or if something breaks down in the wrong area of the pitch, that they could really find themselves in trouble. I think Dani Carvajal being back fully fit is a big boost for that game, because obviously I think Zidane kind of struggled to trust either Danilo or Nacho at right back, to the point where against Osasuna he actually started with a 3-5-2, and I can't see Real Madrid persisting with that into the midweek Champions League fixture. Osasuna do deserve a bit of credit. I mean, they made Real Madrid work quite hard for it, and also made Zidane need to actually look to his bench to kind of change the game a little bit. But it's definitely a very tough tie, because you kind of see how Napoli, they're almost putting together these games which just can kind of occupy the highlights reel for like the Italian equivalent of Match of the Day or whatever for the entire hour of running. I mean, Mertens and Insigne got hat-tricks not too long ago. They seem to be scoring for fun. And Real Madrid, I mean, obviously they've got a pretty good defensive record this season in La Liga, the same as Barcelona's. And they do have that kind of resilience and belief in terms of Ramos can pop up with a late goal. They've got that never-say-die attitude. But it will be interesting to kind of see them play against a team who are just so geared around this quick vertical football. But also, they're more than happy to kind of keep the ball when necessary to allow their fullbacks to get up the pitch, to make the pitch nice and wide. But I think it's going to be one of the biggest tactical tests that Zidane has actually had this season. He has shown that he's prepared to tinker with the 3-5-2. He did it against Sevilla in the Copa del Rey. He played the 3-5-2, as I said, at the weekend. But I think he really should just be sticking to what he knows, sticking to a 4-3-3, and then just hope that they are in a position where they can afford to bring on Bale for the last 20 or 30 minutes and, you know, let him have a run, because I don't think people were quite expecting him to come back to training so soon. But it will be such a boost for Real Madrid fans to see him playing again out on the right-hand side, because no disrespect to Lucas Vazquez, who is a wonderful player, but he's just not on the same level as Bale. And the sooner that they can get him back fit, the sooner that you start to become a lot more optimistic about the two games in hand that they have in La Liga and also in the Champions League. Just his athleticism, just what he can offer, just from one given moment to just pull something out of the hat. He'll be invaluable, especially given that Benzema and Ronaldo, they haven't been at their best so far this season.
Well, there you have it. That is the Liga wrapped up and Barcelona and Real Madrid's Champions League ties previewed. Simon, thank you very much for coming on the Front Three. Where can the listeners find more of you?
Well, you can always find me talking about bits and bobs to do with the Liga on Simon H Football. So at Simon H Football on Twitter. I'm just posting links of things that I've written throughout the week. Got a fair few weekly columns to keep an eye out for, and hopefully it should go some way to keeping your hunger for Spanish football a little bit on the down low.
Right, let's round up the rest of the European action.
Classic.
Let's talk Germany.
Thanks, Simon.
Simon, wonderful, wonderful guest to have on the show.
Cool guy.
Let's talk Germany. Bayern Munich tightening their grip on the title. All six teams behind them in the Bundesliga losing this weekend. Borussia Dortmund, of course, falling to a 2-1 defeat at bottom club Darmstadt with a dreadful performance. Their inconsistent season continues. Their miserable weekend made worse by the fact they've now been ordered to pay a €100,000 fine and close the yellow wall for a domestic match as punishment for the crowd trouble against Leipzig last weekend. Everything's coming up. Principal Skinner for Dortmund as well. Speaking of Leipzig, they have suffered back-to-back defeats now. It's a surprise 3-0 loss at Hamburg, leaving them 7 points behind Bayern Munich, the leaders. They, of course, left it late to beat Ingolstadt. Goals from Arturo Vidal and Arjen Robben with 90 minutes gone, giving Carlo Ancelotti's side all 3 points ahead of this week's Champions League fixture against Arsenal. Hoffenheim, meanwhile, stumbled to a 2-1 defeat at Wolfsburg, while third-place Frankfurt was sunk by the one and only Javier Hernandez. Maybe should have been a nominee for Player of the Week. He scored a double with the Mexican showing why Los Angeles FC are reportedly willing to offer a $12 million a year salary to tempt the former Manchester United striker to the new MLS franchise. So interesting stuff there in Germany. In Italy, meanwhile, Gonzalo Gomez, once again, with a double, another brace for the main man as Juventus maintain their 7-point lead at the top of the table. A 2-0 win for them at Cagliari. The fifth win in a row for the Italian champions. Second place Roma, meanwhile, kept up what I think can be described as light pressure on Juve. Goals from Radja Nainggolan and Edin Dzeko giving them a 2-0 win over Crotone.
Is it Crotone?
I assume.
I thought it was Crotone.
Yeah, that sounds more Italian.
You can't ask me names, lads. I can't contribute to this.
Let me rephrase it, lads.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
With a 2-0 win.
It's like Panettone.
With a 2-0 win over Crotone.
Oh, Adam, I love it when you do your
Thank
accent.
You. Inter Milan and Atalanta remain level of points.
You
I went too far. I went over the top, lads. I've gone
playing
too
Assassin's
far.
Assassin's Creed, Adam.
I won't do the rest of this report in an Italian accent. Level on points in fourth and fifth, Inter Milan and Atalanta, wins over Empoli and Palermo, not bad, respectively.
Yeah, good try.
Napoli, of course, warming up for their Champions League clash with Real Madrid. 2-0 win for them over Genoa. Maurizio Sarri's side. Now unbeaten since October. A total of 18 matches in all competitions without the bitter taste of defeat, Dave.
Adam Boltwood, 1 point to you, 0 point to myself. I'm sorry.
Eat
to
the holiday
shorts. Because the last loss they had was to Juve, wasn't it? October the 29th, 2016.
Meanwhile, France, Nice's title challenge took another setback. 2-2 draw for them at Rennes. It's now just 3 wins in their past 9 league matches, which leaves them 5 points adrift of leaders Monaco, who thumped Metz 5-0. Kylian Mbappe, reported target for Arsenal, scored his first Liga hat-trick. With Radamel Falcao making it 16 goals in 19 games with a brace for the Colombian. PSG, meanwhile, remains second after a 3-0 win at Bordeaux, continuing their recent good form. Unai Emery's side now unbeaten in 7 in the league, still 3 points behind Monaco, going into the big clash against Barcelona this week. Right, player of the weekend time, guys. You have been voting on Twitter. No Manchester United nominees this week, although Stephen Housen himself did tweet in to say Eric Bailly or GTFO. He wasn't happy with our four nominees. Lorenzo
don't have a howl, man.
Lorenzo with his suggestion of Javier Hernandez. Kyle Parr suggesting Falcao. Mike Fryer saying you've got to have Gabbiadini in there, and indeed we did have him in there alongside Sadio Mane. Gonzalo goals himself with that brace for Juventus. And Kylian Mbappe, who we just mentioned, got his first hat-trick in the French league. The results, I'm afraid Gonzalo goals is last with 9%.
Don't know what's wrong with people.
Far behind the other three. It's actually the closest player of the week poll we've had so far. Very tense. Manolo Gabbiadini finishes fourth after his performance for Southampton. 27% of the vote. With 29% of the vote is Kylian Mbappe, which means Sadio Mane takes the coveted crown of TF3 Player of the Week.
He was good.
Sadio, we have a box of Ferrero Rocher with your name on it. Just pop round Dave's to collect it anytime you want, if you are listening. I'm sure he is. And that brings an end to the weekend review, guys. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you had as much fun listening as we did recording. Isn't that right, Lawrence?
Just can't believe we skipped all the drugs problems, but all right, mate.
Drugs problems, drug schmugs. You know what I say?
if you do drugs, you're a schmug. So
I think there's more to come from this story. There'll be more reveals to be heard, and it will be a juicy topic of conversation on Thursday's Q&A. That's what I think.
We'll know more about drugs.
Exactly. Yeah. Drugs.
We don't know.
Whatever.
What do we know? I mean, what about five-a-side then, Adam? I mean, you played five-a-side on the weekend. You missed Dave. You missed me. I was sick. Dave's injured.
We do try and get a good five-a-side going on the weekend once again. Listener Justin came down, but I was the only one there. Dave was missing. Dave, you picked up an injury of some sort?
Yeah, well, I'm training to do the Paris Marathon, and I've developed runner's knee on IT band on my left knee. So unfortunately, Adam, if I want to win the Paris Marathon, which I'm going to do,
nice.
I need to focus, and it's difficult. I don't know what to do. If anyone knows, I've had runner's knee before. That's that. This thing is the IT band. Tweet me and tell me what to do, because the stretches I can do, but at the moment I just can't run, and I've got to do the marathon in like 7 weeks.
What is it?
It's an overextension of one of the outside ligaments or bands in the outside of your knee. And I think it's because I was running on trainers that I'd done like 300 miles in, so it's my own fault, but now I just can't shake it. So could be all over today.
Could be all over. Is that actually threatening your marathon participation?
Properly threatening my career.
Ouch.
I would never be able to run again.
More seriously, though, Lawrence had the man flu, which I think we'll all agree is a critical situation. Are you over that now, Lawrence? You back to back to health?
Adam, if I had man flu, then I would have gone and worked on that day and earned my money, but I didn't.
Your bread.
So I had
and that dough.
I would have earned my bread on that day, all right, mate? Otherwise, we all know, because men who have flu can still go out and earn money.
Yeah.
They just get home and they're like, oh, I'm so feel so
Wait,
sorry.
Is there a difference between men who have flu and man flu? Is that what you're saying?
Oh yes, very much so. You could. Very it's like different. When you say something racist and then you are a racist. I, in many ways, am neither.
What?
but you know what I mean.
Not sure I do, but what I will say,
I think you should.
I was extremely disappointed that you both couldn't attend Five Aside this weekend. You left it to me as the only front three member to put in the performance, and equally disappointing is the fact that I'd said to Dave, bring down your camera, mate, let's film the game, you know, might be a good bit of content for the front for YouTube channel, you know, just something fun. I'm not joking, I put in an incredible performance, absolute screamers from 20 yards, little bits of skill, a few rough tackles. Yes, I did clean out a few players, but you know, that's how it's got to be.
Classic
on the five-side
Adam
pitch.
Boltwood.
So I'm hoping next time we play, we get some cameras in that cage and people will be able to witness the furious
shitness.
Talent that I possess in many ways.
Yeah, I do believe that was what they put on yours, furious talent. My problem with you saying that you scored from 20 yards, Adam, is that the pitch is barely 20 yards itself. So if you
exactly,
score
I scored
yards,
from my own half. It was with an outside of the boot curler, I might add, you know. But I don't want to harp on about my performance too much.
Anything else?
Just Adam, I wasn't there to mark you out the game as usual.
Well,
pull your shirt, nipple twists, you know fight dirty.
The only way.
Let's just make it clear.
Sorry, make what clear?
No, Dave's not a good defender. Dave's a confusing defender. Dave does confusing things which make you go, what is going on? And then Dave goes, oh, got the ball. And it'll be like, oh, I'm going to do this thing where I sort of kneel down, look like I'm praying to God.
Is get the GoPros in that cage and let the audience, the viewers decide for themselves, you know,
I think I agree.
Who is the best player in the front three. It's me. But anyway, guys, that
we need a team name. So for that, we need a team name. For that reason, you should tweet us with the team name of what we should call the series. Like, we need a series name for this.
Sound about five aside.
Cage rage.
Cage rage. It is cage rage in many cases. I did actually make an awful tackle on the one and only Glenn Cowie.
Classic Boltwood.
TFR behind the scenes maestro. And Spencer FC, maestro. But I actually came off worse. I fouled him and I may have, like, I don't know, fractured my knee or something. I've got an absolutely massive bruise on my knee now.
Did you break one of those? I think you broke one of your bands, Adam.
Mate.
Do you think you'll be able to take part in the Paris Marathon?
My furious talent has left me in a bad state.
Lawrence, this isn't a laughing matter.
you sound quite a lot like you're laughing, Nick.
Well, guys, you can look out for that on the Front Free channel soon, I'm very sure. A nice five-a-side series. I think it would be extremely entertaining. You may be laughing at us as opposed to admiring us, but that's fair enough.
Do you think we should also just promo Dave starting a new series this week?
Ooh, I mean, that could be relatively important. Dave, do you want to plug this exciting new chapter in the history of the Front Free?
Daily podcast every single day, Monday to Friday. So not every single day.
Weekday,
Monday to Friday.
It's 24 hours a day, but not at night.
Just be a podcast where I'll be getting the guys on, talking about football. And the first one is going today up on the new Acast. So we'll link it on the Front Free Twitter account.
This is exciting. Football. What's the topic of conversation?
It's football, Adam. We just talk football, mate.
Good.
Talk three things that we learned from the weekend, and we're going to be talking Man United return to attractive football, you bet Juventus, and then the race for the top four. So all great topics.
Whoa. Good God.
Well, guys, that does officially bring an end to this weekend's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with the Q&A, as always. Get your questions in on Twitter at the Front Three. We'll also be reviewing all the Champions League action, of course. Very exciting. Until Thursday, though, Lawrence, where can the whole find you?
Go find me on the brand new Acast app. We're out there, guys. Go and find Dave and I doing this brand new Dave doing it, but I'm sort of behind the scenes. You know, I want to promo it. It's going to be called Statman Dave, the football podcast. Go and take a look. It'll be on iTunes later in the week, on Acast early in the week, so you can get it on Android and on Apple.
Now that is exciting. Dave, I think I already know your answer, but where can the people find you?
On the Statman Dave football podcast, I think. Listen to some stuff there and check it out. Make sure you do it on Acast as well, because they are great guys.
Check it out. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood, tweeting super hot fire every single other day.
Would you say you rage?
No, I wouldn't say I rage at all. I'm a calm and composed individual who uses my cool head to tweet a mixture of banter and analysis or something. Anyway.
I've never heard something so pretentious said on this podcast.
What about the bit where I said I was amazing at football? And
good point.
Good. Guys, we'll see you on Thursday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Stay until then. Have a fantastic week. And remember, cowabunga. It's the only Simpsons quote that came to my head. Disappointing.